The Curing Possible Work Session, House Bill 5053, the Oregon Department of Transportation. And we have some invited guests that are here today. And Mr. Ted Adlin from the AGC, if you'd like to come forward, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ted Adlin, and I'm the president of F.E. Ward Incorporated. I'm a general contractor who specializes in heavy highway work. I'm also a past president of the Associated General Contractors of the Oregon Columbia Chapter, and I currently am the vice chair of the National AGC's Highway Division. One of my committees that I chair at this time, or co-chair, is one that is a communications committee with Oregon Department of Transportation. And it's a committee that I joint chair with Ken Stoman from ODOT, and we work on construction issues between the contractors and the highway department in trying to find better ways to do things and better ways to bring our product to the market. I'm here today to speak about two issues that I would like to share with you in my observations as a contractor and what I see with the Oregon Department of Transportation. I currently have, I think, the largest project under contract with Oregon Department of Transportation, and that is the Camlock-Sylvan project up on Highway 26 by the zoo. The one issue that really is driving so much of what we're seeing out there in the market right now is simply that ODOT is understaffed. The project manager's offices are overworked. They don't have the people, and I can identify close to $1 million that my firm right now is due in monies that we have earned through work that we have done or retainages that are being held and are simply not being processed because they don't have the staff currently to be able to go through all the paperwork that it takes to finalize quantities and do the pay estimates to get things updated and going. I can tell you that those offices are filled with people that are hardworking or dedicated. They're doing everything they can possibly do to get that paper out, get the process done, try to get us paid for the work that we've completed, but they are just overwhelmed at this point. And as you go through this process, I hope you will look at the need for more permanent employees. I'm a great advocate and through AGC have worked on the construct by contract and contracting out. However, in this case, I think that the administrative end of things is something that would be very difficult to contract out. It's an ongoing. We're seeing the T21 money coming in. We're looking at some larger and larger projects that are going to be led by Oregon Department of Transportation. And this is a real concern to construction industry, the contractors, is getting paid quickly, getting the paperwork processed, and we're falling behind. And the farther behind we get, the harder it is to catch up, especially as we now enter the construction season, where there more and more work will be taking place. The second thing that plays to this is the process of fair pay for the project managers and the assistant project managers and those individuals in the management. We're seeing where we're losing a lot of good project managers and potential project managers just because of the pay differential. In the state of Oregon, a project manager makes approximately $48,000 and needs to be a professional engineer to hold that position. His counterpart at the city of Portland is making $70,000 plus and does not have to be a project engineer, or excuse me, a professional engineer to hold that. So you have individuals who are coming up are assistant project managers, and they have to get their PE to make the next step in grade and pay, and they can move over to the city of Portland, get a tremendous raise, and they don't have to go through the process of becoming a professional engineer to do that. I think that we need to fairly pay those individuals to get that to where new people coming up and new engineers coming online with the Department of Transportation will want to fill those spots and are making a livable wage. Now, I'll grant you that I think Portland is highly paid, and I think ODOT is locally paid, and there's a place in between there that needs to be met. But that is really a concern, and we're seeing good people go away. We get accused of cherry-picking off the best of the project managers, and you can't blame them for coming to private enterprise when they can make an extra $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year in doing that. And these are people that would like to stay, I think, with ODOT. They like that role, and they like that position of what they're doing. But those are really two concerns that we have in the industry that we see, that we feel that ODOT needs to be able to step up, hire more people, take care of the process, and be able to fairly pay their people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions by committee members? The one question that I have is this, as far as the pay and the paperwork, is that a region or district problem, or is that problem statewide?
It's a problem statewide.
So if you're saying that, then your position is that more project managers, how about design managers? Could we cut back on one and increase the other?
No, I hope not. I think in order for the department to run and run smoothly, that they got to have competent people who are fairly paid to get that work done. And I'm a taxpayer like all of you, and I don't want to see too many people or overpaid, but I want to see a fair balance to where the industry can run smoothly.
Okay. Thank you. Comments or questions by members? If not, Mike Montero, apparently not here. Mike Gadaraba, welcome to the committee.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Mike Gadaraba. I'm the Safety, Health, and Environmental Manager for Mitsubishi Silicon America here in Salem, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Mid-Willamette Area Commission on Transportation, or MWAC. This 16-member commission is made up of representatives from 12 jurisdictions from Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, plus three representatives from the private sector and one member from ODOT. In early 1997, when MWAC was formed, we were asked to help ODOT increase public involvement and to develop a regional decision-making capability. Members of the commission took this seriously. An increasingly effective process advising the OTC and ODOT on transportation issues in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties is developing. The programs and plans that MWAC has reviewed or provided input to include the Oregon Transportation Plan update, the Oregon Highway Plan update, Region 2 corridor planning projects such as the McMinnville 3-mile lane refinement study and the Salem Bridgehead engineering study, and the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, or the STIP. As part of the STIP update, MWAC hosted a regional open house on March 4th of this year to obtain public input from the three counties. After receiving this input and some discussion regarding our ongoing priorities, the Commission concurred that the draft STIP did reflect the needs of the three counties, but we also advocated a prioritized list of additional needs for inclusion into this or future STIP updates should additional funding become available. MWAC has consistently pushed for greater emphasis on funding safety needs and identifying safety-related projects for the STIP. This has become an increasingly important issue with our commission as the number of highway accidents has increased. As part of the emphasis on safety, MWAC recommended, and ODOT is currently conducting, a study of safety issues and potential improvements in the Highway 18 and 22 corridors. ODOT has already partially responded to the study with double yellow line striping on Highway 18, plus the addition of a traffic ahead warning light on Highway 99W south of Dundee. We look forward to the completion of the study and appreciate the quick response exhibited by Region 2 staff in responding to our concerns. As a member of the private sector, I've noted three things in particular about our commission. First, during the period that MWAC has operated, the sometimes parochial viewpoints that were apparent in the early stages have evolved into a truly cooperative regional strategy. Second, while the commission is still in its infancy stages, MWAC is beginning to develop its own personality. Quite honestly, we're pushing the envelope and feel good about it. And third, ODOT's attitude towards the commission shows a continuing willingness to listen. The commission's attitude, members think it's worth our time. The 2+ years that ODOT and MLAC have invested is beginning to pay off and should have increasingly positive benefits. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here today. The dialogue between the commission, ODOT, and the OTC is effective in helping us deal with regional issues of common concern, such as traffic safety, congestion, and the maintenance and preservation of our transportation system. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Questions or comments by committee members? Senator Yee.
Thank you. When do you think the study on safety will be completed?
I expect it's going to be completed within the next couple months from the information that we've been getting from Region 2 staff. We have seen one presentation of where we were shown various intersections and other areas in Polk and Yamhill counties where they had identified an issue and the work that they were doing to date. Also, as I said, they did some double yellow line striping to reduce passing and added a traffic signal. I don't think it's going to be long before the commission be, but I'd have to defer to a Region 2 person for an exact answer to that.
Yes.
So is this duplicating what the Transportation Commission is doing when you do it separately?
We were asked by the Transportation Commission to give them input and input regarding what we see in the three county issues, and ultimately they make the decisions, but we have testified before the OTC a couple times a year and have had ongoing conversations with the OTC along the way. So we feel that they are listening to us.
Follow-up question. So what are the features you're looking for safety? I mean, are you looking at, I think you mentioned congestion. Are you looking at past accident records?
We have reviewed accident records. Just in our last meeting, we looked at the 5-year history of accident records in the Highway 22, Highway 18, 99W, 99E corridors. That's one of the things that has been brought to us that is part of our discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. Lou Ogden, Mayor of Tualatin.
Morning, Chair Ann and members of the committee. As you just announced, my name is Lou Ogden. I'm the mayor of Tualatin. And I'd like to talk today a little bit about the relationship, the working relationship between ODOT and local government and as it relates to the upcoming budget review. Just for perspective, I am fortunate to be the chair of the League of Oregon Cities Transportation Committee, so I have had quite a bit of experience in conversations with cities across the state on transportation issues. Also work quite closely with the counties, so I go on here to speak for AOC, the input from various counties across the state as well. I think the key message that I just want to give to you is that there is a strong working relationship between ODOT and local government across the state. And there has been a significant change and evolution, if you will, over the last 2 or 3 years in terms of that cooperative effort. And where in the past, many times, the perception has been local governments wanting to move one direction and having to overcome ODOT in some cases on particular projects or on funding priorities. Clearly, that is not the case these days, and clearly there is a cooperative and working relationship. I'll give you some of the examples, and I didn't write down the dates. My memory isn't as good as it used to be. It was never anything to brag about, but I believe 2 years ago, the local official advisory committee to the Oregon Transportation Commission was reestablished or revitalized. Just to kind of give you a perspective of the paradigm shift, the local official advisory committee to the commission is comprised of some city and county folks, elected and technical. I believe that committee was in its formation several years ago, and because of, frankly, the fact that it really wasn't accomplishing anything, I believe, though I wasn't involved, it sort of just died because there was no reason to get together. At the urgence of chair of the commission, excuse me, Henry Hewitt, and Director Grace Kernighan, understanding the need to re-engage local government, we started that group back up a couple of years ago. We meet regularly. We have very frank and very detailed discussions about issues that affect local government across the state. And I will tell you that one of the results that came out of those meetings was a local government view of the highway plan that ODOT has just finished. That was reviewed through a committee of LOAC, again, a local official advisory committee, kind of a subgroup of us. It was also taken on the road and was had open meetings with elected officials and technical folks from cities and counties all across the state, over 300 local folks who participated in framing that highway plan. There were changes made because of concerns and issues by local government. It is really a cooperative product. I think the there's another example of where local government, again, elected and technical folks are working with ODOT people on and the feds in terms of how we better utilize, or I should say better respond to federal requirements, getting down to what is reality on the road, what needs to be done versus what can be negotiated or reinterpreted, again, to save our federal dollars and get more of them on the road. I think the overall attitude really between the commission and the director, when it comes to working with local government anyway, is that not all the problems are fixed. Not all the working relationships are perfect, and not all the issues are easy. But the attitude is, let's get together in the room, let's roll up our sleeves, let's figure out what's best for the people we all serve, who are the citizens of Oregon, let's figure out a way to get to yes rather than always figuring out why we have to say no. I think that's been a big help. I'd like to make just a plug, if I may. On the budget for the TGM, Transportation Growth Management, grants that are available to local government. I know a concern by many folks is we want to put all of the, as much of the transportation dollars that we can into concrete and asphalt. And believe me, I share that, particularly coming from an area where we're smothered with congestion and we need more roads. But there are some things that are absolutely vital, and planning is one of those. TGM grants go directly to local government, to cities and counties, for transportation plans, to help us through our transportation system plans, which are a requirement of periodic review, the requirement of Goal 12. If the legislature would see fit to not fund the TGM grants through highway money, through gas tax money, I would simply ask that we find out another way to fund them because they're absolutely critical to local governments. And I can give you a list of local governments, large and small, who've utilized the TGM grants over the last few years in terms of planning our transportation systems. One other thing, if I may, we encourage the work that the legislature is doing in evaluating and debating an increase in gas tax, the issue of raising some more money so we can get back on the maintenance curve is critical. I use the analogy all the time, the leaky roof, and you know, if you don't fix the leaky roof, the ceiling gets to be a real mess. And we appreciate that effort. One of the things that I would ask, though, for your appreciation and for your support of some additional money, there's been talk of 2 cents that can be bonded so we can do projects, because I tell you, as much as the roof needs fixing, as critical as that is, in my community, for example, and I think across the state, if folks see an increase in the gas tax and don't see any project money, you're going to feel deceived because most people aren't all that concerned about the maintenance. They don't see it. What they do see is a lack of new streets, new intersection safety improvements, new roads. So I would just urge you to seriously consider some additional money for the purpose of bonding some additional projects over the next few years. And with that, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask you a question that if we're unable to get the 6 cent increase, we maybe adopt the 4 cent increase. How many projects would you be able to bring online in Tualatin?
Sharon, I don't believe first of all, again, how depending on how that portion is split, I understand that a lion's share of that would go to local government. I believe from the numbers I've seen, and they're a bit dated because the proposed formulas are changing, but 4 cents would basically give the city of Walden about $250,000 a year more. Right now we get about $800,000 a year. You can appreciate the cost of doing an intersection that might be $1 million or more just for an intersection. Improvement, I mean, an existing intersection. So $250,000 will do really no more for us than to allow us to do potholes repair, which is critical. Again, when the roof is leaking, you don't fix it, the ceiling falls in. So 4 cents will do a lot for us from the standpoint of maintenance and fixing the systems that we have, but will do generally nothing for us from the standpoint of being able to do more projects. I'm not going to go do anything in Tualatin with $250,000 a year.
How much revenue?
In terms of projects.
How much revenue is generated by the city itself towards roads and streets?
Local governments in general, and again, I'm going to have to defer to my league analyst who has all the numbers at the top of his head, and we'll get that information for you. But anecdotally, if my memory serves me correct, local government raises about 60% of all of our money locally. That is not with the state gas tax or with federal money. So that's true. Like, for example, in Tualatin, we have a street maintenance fee. In Washington County, we have MSTIP, which is a property tax voted by property taxpayers. So we do local improvement districts, developers contribute on projects. So again, we raise about 60%. We also have a traffic impact fee in Washington County. So, but we're still a long way. If you swim halfway across the river, even 60% of the way across the river, you're still just as dead as if you fall off the bank and drown in 8 feet of water.
Yeah. Questions, all right, committee members. Senator Dukes?
The $250,000, is that based on at one time a 4 cent increase in the first year?
That's, if my memory is correct, and I hate to throw numbers out, somewhere in this pile, if I did so, I could find it, but I believe that would be after 4 cents is fully implemented, and I believe...
So 2 and 2?
Well, I don't know what the legislation will give us, but I believe, if my memory is right, after we have 4 cents in place, we're collecting that, and I think that was predicated on the assumption of a current or a proposed 50% to state. Eric, the brains. 50% to state, 30% to county, 5% to city. I believe then for the city of 12 and 4 cents would end up with $250,000 a year.
I thought 4 cents first year would make a significant jump start.
Well, again, for maintenance projects, you know, a penny raise is about $25 million statewide, and depending on how you split it out and so on. But again, David, you could answer that more directly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg from League Oregon Cities. Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, there's been so many different permutations of how funds would be split, even with 4 cents, based on doing it as the Republican leadership forwarded the proposal and as it came out of House Transportation. It would mean about $13 per capita for cities. Currently, cities get close to $45 per capita from the state highway fund. So it's a significant increase of 13% of the, $13 increase over the existing $45. But as our Mayor Ogden had stated, the cities raise between 50 and 60% in general of their revenue. So it's a significant jumpstart. But just some of the projects when you get into modernization are so expensive.
That 4 cents first year had mostly distributed to the cities and counties?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the distribution essentially would be about 23% to cities. In the formula that cities and the department and counties have agreed on and put forward in applications, we were looking for 50, 30, 20 split. So in the lion's share, as Chair Ogden or Mayor Ogden said, going to local governments, that increases the city's share by about 3%.
We're pretty close to the standard. Okay. I thought the House proposal was, at this point, was almost nothing to the state. So,
Senator, oh,
I'm sorry, there's almost what?
Almost nothing to the state, but maybe I haven't looked at the bills, so maybe I'm wrong.
Chair Hannon and Senator Duke, what the plan coming out of the House did was took 65% of the new revenue and allocated it 50-30-20. Then took the remaining 35% share and then allocated that 70% to counties and 30% to cities. So, in essence, the largest share went to the counties. It sort of flipped between the counties and the state, and cities remained generally constant with a little improvement.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Ogden, you indicated that the amount that you raise locally is about 60% without any gas taxes. Is that 60% local? Is that from a hostelry tax or something of that nature? Where does that come from?
Well, that's sort of a general number, again, to identify some of the things that we do in Tualatin and Washington County. For example, we have a road maintenance fee in Tualatin. I believe there's one in Medford.
Ashland, Wilsonville.
And so this is something that we have locally just put on as an additional fee that residents pay every month. In addition to that, though, we have, again, traffic impact fees that are paid by developers, both residential and commercial, that is a countywide revenue source. We have, in Washington County, major streets, transportation improvement plan. The colloquial term for that is LISTIP. We've actually had three of those bond measures approved by the voters countywide as a property tax. We've raised, I believe, about $250 million over the last dozen years or 3 years, 3 years, and 6 years. It's not completed yet, but we do local improvement districts where residents, property owners, will collectively build a project. The city will front the money, and then it's paid back by the local.
And follow up, Mr. Chair, the road maintenance fee, is that a property tax? Is that based upon sales? Is that?
It's actually a user fee that we add to the water bill. It's not part of the water bill in terms of a water bill. It's just a collection of rights that we use. And it's a flat amount.
Continue to follow up, Mr. Chair. If you do receive an additional $250,000as the beginning, starting spot of any kind of a gas tax increase, how much of that would go directly to asphalt, oil, sand, gravel, chips, fields? Everything else is in place, isn't it? In other words, you don't need to hire new engineering staff. You don't need to hire or go out and buy lots of new trucks and tractors and those kinds of things. Could we anticipate that 100% of that would go on to the road itself?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we have, in the city of Tualatin, we're 20,000 people. We have just over 100 employees citywide. That included fire. We have an engineering department with an engineering manager and a couple engineers who are highly dedicated to our building services and special plan review. To answer your question directly, if we were going to do any sort of a project that included improving an intersection, adding curbs, adding a turn lane, something like that, we contract engineering work for that. So we would probably not add staff. We probably wouldn't add equipment. But some of that money does go into planning, design, specification, that sort of thing. So it doesn't all go into concrete per se, but it all goes into getting the concrete and asphalt down.
Okay. In regard to an intersection, let's talk about the intersection. You said if you had $1 million, you could do an intersection. Don't, in fact, the developers normally plan for an intersection and you charge that back to the developers as a practical matter?
I'm sure, but actually, generally speaking, developers will pay for the streets or the street improvements, local streets, street improvements that directly is on their property frontage. If we're talking about our collector streets and the streets that you would drive from your house down to the grocery store, to, you know, the main streets that we call collectors or arterials, those are paid through collective funds, not individual property owners per se. So that's where our impact fees, bond issues come in, and this gas tax money that we get.
Okay. Finally, if you did have a need for, because of enhanced business, enhanced desire to put in millions of dollars and new improvements on each of Four Corners, and the businesses themselves were, the developers of those businesses themselves were willing to come in with that money, would that, how would the city feel about that? Is the city going to study that until the businesses go away? Or
absolutely not. Again, normally, oftentimes, a development wouldn't have direct access on a major intersection because, again, you don't put a driveway or something very close to a major intersection where you have a state highway coming through or whatever you build off of that. And so, again, those monies would collectively go into an impact fund. But specifically, if they wanted to add a turn lane so that there's better access into an off-street, an off-highway improvement or something like that, absolutely. And that, again, what I tried to refer to earlier in terms of in an earlier day, those types of things are often problematic with ODOT because we were talking about accessing the state system or whatever, and that's where we would get into our proverbial fighting matches. The developer would come here and want to add money. Obviously, we still need to protect the interest of access management and moving traffic through, but certainly that type of cooperation with ODOT is a type of thing that improves significantly, where we sit down and figure out how do we do it, exactly what you're talking about, Representative Butler, and City of Sherwood's a prime example we're working through right now.
So if we were to have a business, a group of businesses that were in process of development in areas that were growing out in Tualatin, with you as the mayor, could we safely say that it wouldn't take you between 15 and 18 years to develop a study before those businesses could go ahead and start to move in?
Well, I would hope not. I think that one of the things I remember the director talking about when she first came was the fact that project cycle seemed to be a bit protracted. Oftentimes, the studies would occur, there'd be no funding to do the project. If incremental pieces of funding would jump through, it would be years later, and you have to go back and reevaluate the project original study. I mean, sometimes that's a fact of life. I will address your question. The answer is, I hope we wouldn't take that long. I think I would hope we'd find a way, if we had money available on a project that we had to do, we'd figure out a way to get it done in a timely manner so that development continues to occur. But the antithesis of that is, exactly in Tualatin, our biggest problem is, if I may digress just for a moment, is connecting 99W, which is a state highway, to I-5, and right now there's a county road between Tualatin and Sherwood where huge amounts of traffic from Mendenhall, Newburgh, the whole regional area, Yamhill County, as well as Washington County, access I-5 through Tualatin. We've been trying for 25 years to get a project through, and there's been many dollars devoted to studying a West Side bypass, an I-599 connector. We are to the point where our study really is, there are many pieces that need to be done still, but there's no point in going any further until we get some funding. But that's a perfect example of, in my mind, a lot of money committed to study work that basically died because there was no funding to move ahead with the project. And in the meantime, development goes up around it, houses, businesses go in, the corridors are lost, and we end up having, quote-unquote, wasted a lot of money on studies when we should have been building roads.
So what we're saying is that 25 years' worth of study is basically going to yield you probably nothing at that particular point, including the loss of the potential of being able to connect those two without vastly taking a look at a lot more resources.
Representative Butler, it will take a lot more resources. I won't say it will give us absolutely nothing, because through that 25 years of diligence, we have established that connector as a major priority for the region. It's on our regional transportation plan. We've had legislation a couple sessions ago to authorize tolling. There has been progress toward it, glacial speed, but the momentum is rather slow. To answer your question, though, those kind of projects, Had we not done that kind of work, we wouldn't even be talking about it at all today. The point is, though, the reason that never anything ever got done is because we didn't have the funding to go do it. It's a matter of the dollars to do a large project.
My final question, Mr. Chairman, that is that I recognize that 25 years is of studying something is really glacial speed, but if you had the business developers that were willing to come forward and that were willing to, after 25 years or after 15 years or after 18 years, willing to say we're tired of it, if we've got ourselves a situation here which is damaging Tualatin's business growth, it's damaging the entire area's economic growth, and now we've got ourselves a situation which is causing life and limb at the cost of accidents repeatedly, and that those businesses were willing to come forward, and the developers or the businesses themselves are willing to pay 100%, what would be the response of Tualatin in terms of yes or no, and in terms of how many years we can expect that anything could be done?
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, if we had the business community coming together to fund a project like that, I'm sure we would find a way to do it in a timely manner. This particular project, depending on the scope of it, is $50 to $150 million. And depending on if we put one lane in or three lanes or whatever, I would be surprised if our business community could support that project wholly. If we had Intel or General Motors or someone come in and want to build a connector for us, we figure out a way to get it done with ODOT's help, I'm sure.
I just want to make sure that the mayor is familiar with the fact that it is not uncommon in other states for General Motors and Intel's and Levi corporations to come in and fund those kinds of projects when they see that they can move their traffic around. And I don't think that we need to gear our entire economic development within a community to the slowest cog in the entire set of wheels. We've got to start being proactive, and we've got to look at, what is the fastest that we can do it. And I didn't hear from you the fastest that we could do it if private industry was willing to do it. Because if Intel was willing to come to your community tomorrow and make the commitment, would it be another 25 years? Would it be 18 years? Would it be 13 years? Or would we get the standard 5 years, in which time they would say, thanks, but no thanks? Any time idea after 25 years of study?
Well, again, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the 25 years hasn't been study in terms of should we or shouldn't we, where would we do it, how would we do it. It's basically been 25 years of developing a project and trying to establish funding for it. It's been keeping it on, trying to get it on the STIP, trying to get it on the regional transportation plan, those sorts of things. To answer your question directly, though, frankly, to build a 6-mile connector, you're talking about acquiring right-of-way, which involves property owners, dollar willing sellers, and that's a very time-consuming process. And that's before you do the federal requirements that are required, the draft environmental impact studies and so on that are federal requirements that we can't get around. In our case, there's some wetland areas. There are significantly natural resource areas in terms of geological formations and so on. To answer your question, it sounds, believe me, I'd be the happiest person in the universe if I had a large business come in and said, we're going to fund $50 million for a road. We'd figure out a way to do it, but it wouldn't happen in a year or 2 years. I'm not technically astute enough to answer your question directly, but I would not think it would be done in less than 3 years. I'm sort of just kind of pulling that number at random. Again, just because of the legal process that's involved, if I may, I don't mean to say this humorously, but I use this a lot, particularly if we talk about, it isn't just ODOT. I mean, we have people in the city of Tualatin on any issue, whether it's building a park, building a road, building a swimming pool, or planting a tree, you got 49 for and 51 against. And I always use the example that, Saddam Hussein builds roads quickly. He does whatever he wants. It's very efficient, very expedient. A whole lot better than our process in terms of getting things done. I don't think many of us would like to do it that way, though. The public process is
very expensive, and you're talking about someone who came in to local government thinking I could pound my fist and get things done, but there are the folks who vote and pay taxes that want their opinions made known.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my point is that the communities such as Tualatin that may be many years, even if the opportunity was there and the money was in hand, being offered to the community, they're going to be many years before any kind of money does them any good when we start talking about intersections and roads and streets and those sorts of things. And that's why I would want to see every last dime of any new project money go into asphalt, oil, sand, gravel, chips, and seal rather than studies. We've studied this planet enough that we do not need more studies. We need to get our roads back into good or better shape. And as I say, any kind of a program which dumps money into a community for anything other than to take care of the infrastructure that we've got probably is wasted money, because it will just go into more studies, which will put us many years down the line away from the things that we're really after.
Sure. Yeah, just kind of a party thought. I agree significantly with the comments that Representative Butler made about let's put our money where our needs are the greatest. And as I mentioned, the leaky roof is, the ceiling's going to be falling on us. If we had money for projects, I can tell you, though, there's a list. Hundreds of millions of dollars of projects that are significantly studied. And again, maybe we need to acquire right away. Maybe we need to do some federal impact GIS work. But they're basically off the shelf, ready to build if we had the money to do it. The biggest concern, frankly, is as those sit on the shelf, they do become stale. And right away becomes built up, and people build houses and expand their businesses and take up what we want with the roads. But I would suggest that if we had the money, we wouldn't be studying projects to death. We'd be building new projects.
Great. Thank you. I was going to ask you a question from the Day Road site. I understand that there's an extension of Highway 22. Is that...
And actually, just on the north end of Wilsonville, the south end of Tualatin.
It ties into I-5 there.
There is access to the North Stafford Interchange from Bay Road, indirectly through Bloomsbury Road, yes.
So the road going through there would actually impact the siting of the facility there.
Chairman, at this point, we don't have a road sited in that area specifically at Day Road. We have a corridor that's been identified that if we were going to build a connector between I-5 and going west in INW at Sherwood, because it's an alignment corridor of where that road could go, it would possibly include that area. To be honest with you, a project, again, that's that $60 to $150 million project that probably won't be built in 1999 or maybe not even in 2000. I say that with a bit of jest, but we are looking, though, at actually doing some county road improvements, which would include the Day Road itself and some other county roads west of that to hook up with 99W as an interim, quote-unquote, connector from I-5 to 99W. Involves widening some existing county roads, using some city street money, and paving a little bit of new right-of-way that would actually go right through, right down that street.
Okay, thank you. Other questions,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And then just quickly add to what the mayor said in responding to questions from Representative Butler. We surveyed the cities around the state and asked them A, what their needs were, and B, what they've done to become more efficient, and C, what would you do with additional revenue if you received it from a gas tax increase? And overwhelmingly, the response was, fix Oak, to Elm, resurface it, fill potholes, things that were essential, unexciting. A few cities talked about modernization needs. The needs weren't what they could fund locally of building a connector. Generally, it was fixing an intersection. That most of the use of the local funds that would be generated would be immediately put to work, and it would be... done, I think, as Representative Butler stated, is asphalt, concrete, what have you, striping, pretty unexciting but critical things to the operation. And that also, in some communities, it would help to match other funds and leverage funds from the private sector and the state to move some of the projects forward. And be happy to make available to the committee their responses to the survey, so you can see the handwritten response from Vail on what they would do or what have you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. One comment, I'm an accountant, and accountants really love unexciting things, like getting roads fixed up and things like that. I mean, that really turns us on to see asphalt and oil and pavement go down, those unexciting projects that we're talking about. So the cars and trucks and everything that moves across them don't start losing wheels and those kinds of things, and R&M goes up on all of the equipment that's got.
And it's very exciting for people have to drive those rotten roads and make them
start safe. Count is love on exciting things.
Well, we appreciate your enthusiasm.
Are there further questions?
If not, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
John Putnam. He said that he was exactly what he was talking about. Would you be able to help them with this chair?
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. How are you?
Good.
Good. This morning I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the request from the governor for $10 million for critical need for elderly and disabled in the governor's budget. My name is John Putman. I reside at 6960 Southwest Clinton in Tigard, Oregon. I'm here today as a citizen with an extensive knowledge of policy, funding, and operations of Oregon public transportation systems in both the rural and urban area. I also use public transportation systems to meet the majority of my mobility needs. Recently at the Oregon Transportation Conference in Seaside this year, I attended a workshop where the statewide mobility needs survey was reviewed. This study shows the critical need throughout the state for elderly and disabled transportation. I've ridden them all, Seattle to Portland on the Talgo, Portland to Klamath on a straight line Amtrak, MAX, which I got to tell you, MAX is the best in Portland, without a doubt, in public transportation. For both of us in mobility devices, is the best. SMART out of Wilsonville's connection to Salem for commuters. The Thruway bus from Eugene back to Portland. Numerous transit systems, paratransit systems, taxi cabs. I see the need, and I am the need. The Oregon Livability Initiative, Oregon Transportation Network, begins to lay the foundation of achieving statewide mobility goals, which are outlined in many state transportation documents, of which I did not list all those documents, but I could if you'd like to hear them all. By approving $10 million state general fund and $10 million from federal funds, coordinating human resource transportation funding with statewide rail bus programs linking customers to appropriate services and programs, I think would be a big help. The $14 million state general fund to connect passenger rail service in the Willamette Valley with bus service around the state, I also believe would be of value. I need to be a little self-serving here for a minute, and I hope you'll bear with me. 10 years ago, I began my public involvement on the STF committee in Klamath Falls at Basin Transit. I ran in a general election, was elected twice to the board of directors, and twice served as chairman of the board. Since moving to Portland 5 years ago, I became again involved in public transit, where I now serve on TriNet's Citizens Committee on Accessible Transportation and also on Metro's TPAC Committee. And TPAC stands for Transportation Policy Advisory Committee. Also this year, I chaired the Citizens Advisory Committee for TriNet in their STF committee. I feel this uniquely qualifies me to speak to you today concerning the funding, concerning the funding commitment the state of Oregon needs to make on behalf of elderly and those with disabilities. We are always doing more with less. The majority of Oregon public transit needs are funded with scarce local dollars that are always competing with local police and fire services. And I always like to remind, this always brings me to a point of a cute story. When I used to discuss the value of public transit with the flamboyant former mayor of Klamath Falls, George Flitcraft, who used to always say to me, "John, when I dial 911, I don't want to get a bus." And that sounds kind of funny, but really in any rural area that you fund public transit, especially after Measure 5, you basically have taken a police or a fireman or a police car or a fire truck off the road, because that's the dollars you have to get. And so it's a really tough, tough debate. And I really believe that it's time that the state makes a commitment to the transit, the public transit infrastructure that's out there today. And I think that the Oregon Transportation Network might be a good start. I was reviewing a summary last night of the Oregon Transit Network and noticed that Klamath Falls was mentioned as a city that still does not meet the minimum level standard, which is connecting the next largest city to the next largest economy. And you know, it was interesting because we started down that road to connect that Klamath Falls to Medford 7 years ago. I was chairman of the board, and Sharon Coleman was my special needs coordinator at Basin Transit, who is now the chairman or the general manager of RBTD in Medford. So it wasn't from a lack of desire or need or anything else. It was really from totally a lack of funding. And that's the thing that's really what we need and why we need that not to fall out of the governor's budget. In my role as TriMet's FTS committee chair and member of TPAC, I might tell you that at TPAC right now, we're in the process of cutting down the list for granting awards. And the request was $330 million, of which we only have $75 million. That's only one region and one small, really, that's just one region. And we're at 150, we'll be down to the 100 cut list by Friday, I think. But when you look at that and you think about that, an interchange modernization of 72nd Avenue between 99 and Hunsaker, which has to have an overcrossing, cost $28 million. 2 cents on the gas tax is the minimum that we can do. And we've got to have more than that every year to do anything, to keep the economy rolling. Look, roads are economy. And every time that we sit here and don't believe that we can put that money up or should raise that cost of gas, the gas companies, or the fuel companies, raised the cost of gas yesterday. We need to get our share. At the FCF committee, we had $10 million worth of requests over 5 years, and I think we have about $4 million to give out. Not very good. And FCF is directly senior and disabled transportation. The gaps are large. The gaps are large between requests and allocations, and I know that you wrestled with the same dilemma at the state level. I really believe it's time to make the commitment to your public transit system throughout the state. The providers have always worked very hard with limited resources to provide the best level of service possible throughout the state of Oregon for elderly and people with disabilities. Coordination and collaboration are extremely important and are happening all over Oregon. There are many success stories. What is needed now is funding to secure the infrastructure that exists and lay the foundation for the network to build upon. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Senator Yee.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Putnam.
Yes.
I have a very basic question. I want to know, do we achieve more economy if we combine public transit and transit for senior and disabled? I mean, I support transportation for senior and disabled, but do we, can we use our dollar more if we combine the two, except on the public transit bus have ramps and access for the disabled to get on? I mean, will we be able to increase more services that way?
I'm a firm believer that no one likes to climb stairs. And so, yes, I think so, because I think when I ride MAX or I go to the Rose Garden and see ramps, I'm always amazed at the number of people who would prefer to walk up a ramp or access something that is ground level or easy access. And I think that is a part of building a better, more livable community that generates a better economy. I mean, because people can use it both ways. You're not building two systems. In other words, when I can access the same bus that someone that has that's ambulatory, as I call them, ambulatory, I think that when we can share that same vehicle, that we are getting a lot more bang for our buck.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're getting a considerably better situation. When we build two and three and four systems that all do kind of the same thing, then I think we cost ourselves more money. There are people in the disabled community who absolutely have to have special types of transportation which can't be incorporated into the fixed route or the mainline hauler. That's just something else that they can't do it, so they have to have a special need. But a lot of them can, and I think a lot of them are trying. I know on MAX right now, the number of mobility devices on any given day is just overwhelming because it's so accessible. And the thing that the state of Oregon should realize, and especially in the Portland market, is Portland is one of the most accessible cities on the West Coast. And so it is going to have a large amount of people with mobility needs live there.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
So you have no objection to combining the two, except maybe some people with really special needs can have a separate kind of transportation needs.
I guess maybe you should explain to me what you mean by combining the two.
A one public transit system for everybody, including the senior and disabled, except maybe
one. Well,
it's
pretty much that way now, isn't it? I mean, it really is. I mean, we have certain agencies or certain types of agencies that provide certain types of things, but it's all pretty much combined. I mean, we're all working towards the same goal, whether it's Wilsonville providing service in their community or TriMet in their community or RBTD in Medford or Basin Transit in Klamath Falls or Chariots in Salem. I mean, what we're trying to do is get so that those systems are connected to each other so that if someone who has to use public transportation needs that service, they could go from one community to another community on some type of public transit system. And I think it can happen. We need a little help down in Klamath Falls. The will is there. I mean, I've got the people that lived in Klamath Falls now run the system in Medford. I mean, there's no lack of desire. It's just the lack of enough money to run a bus across the hill once a day.
But why is the funding separate? We're asking for separate funding for senior and disabled.
Well,
so we're actually asking for funding for public transit for everybody?
Well, if you're looking at the item, you want to share what page that's in the budget. There's $20 million in general fund money that we currently do not have in this subcommittee. And
you mean $10 million, Mr. Chairman?
$10 million, excuse me, and it would be matched with about $10 million federal funds.
Uh-huh.
But we currently do not have that at our disposal yet. That's an issue yet to be decided. So it's 10 million other funds, which in this case is federal funds, 10 million general funds, and that's a decision policy package that has yet to be decided on whether it's going to be funded or not.
But I guess my question is it for public transit in general?
It's for public transit in general.
Oh, not specifically for senior disabled.
It is inclusive of seniors and disabled.
Right. It can do a lot, and it's the building block that I think that we would be helpful to coordinate a lot of maybe overlays where one agency is doing something that another agency is already doing. Things like purchasing the vehicles, where if one agency was purchasing a certain type of vehicle that could be used, you know, for certain types of things, that might be better if they knew the kinds of vehicles of public transit things would be better for them to use than the kind they might buy. Where a person driving that vehicle to a meeting could also, that vehicle could be used to take a wheelchair to a meeting at a later time in the day. I know that's kind of vague, but let's say low-floor minivans, for instance, are a lot more acceptable across the board because they could be used by state employees to drive to and from meetings, and they could also be cycled in and out of need in areas that need that type of vehicle to haul people to. I mean, there's a lot of crossover that many of you get. I may not have touched it right. Bernie's here. Bernie could probably touch on it better if you wanted to ask him. I'm sure he'd be glad to do it. You know, he may have a more in-depth explanation than me.
So, Mr. Chairman, yes. The money for public transit in general with provision to buy excess equipment.
It's broken out in there, there's definite, it's broken out in about four different categories. I've been
saving
here.
Maybe answer this one. I know that when we started the special transportation fund with the cigarette tax money, there was a requirement that to use it, excuse me, a line or an operator had to carry at least 50% senior disabled people. And if TriNet meets that and has from the beginning, I don't know if that's still a requirement or not. But it got it into regular transit services. But they had to demonstrate that they were making an effort and were actually, the passengers were high enough up. I know there were a lot of, well, not only a lot, but there at least are some rural transit carriers that are on the edge of going under because it's an expensive thing and they're rural and if they were to go to close their doors, the impact on the senior and disabled communities would be much greater than it would be on the average community. So they actually rely a lot on senior and disabled services. And some of them run special buses, say, from an area into Portland or Salem or Eugene for medical facilities, and those are generally heavily used by senior and disabled people. Mm-hmm.
Bernie, do you want to identify yourself, please?
Chair Hannon, Bernie Bottomley with TriMet in Portland. Senator Yee, Senator Dukes, try to clarify the funding request in the governor's proposal, the $10 million general fund, would be for elderly and disabled transportation programs, similar to the current cigarette tax revenue that was mentioned earlier, the STF funding. Generally, the request from the transit community has been to the state to help with that particular part of our work with the elderly and disabled transportation. If the state would like to define their role more broadly, we'd be happy to have the help. But generally, we have asked the state to help the local communities with elderly and disabled transportation because that is the one area where there is a significant need and very little ability in most of the areas of the state to meet that need. There are over 200 transit providers around the state. The vast majority of them are volunteer operations that have one van or two vans. The state supports them by buying the van, paying for gas, paying for maintenance on the van. So there isn't as much overlap with public in general public transportation as maybe we would like in those areas. But we have continued to look to the state to help us meet the elderly and disabled part of our needs and relied on local resources to provide the general transportation part of public transportation. So the funding request is for elderly and disabled transportation would be required to be used on that system. In areas where there are larger transit districts like Portland, Salem, Eugene, Medford, Klamath Falls, Hood River, Colco up in Columbia County, we would use that funding for primarily for lift programs. In Portland, we provide about 400,000 elderly and disabled lift rides every year, but we provide about 4 million elderly and disabled rides on our fixed route system. So, Senator Yee, you're correct. We do a much more efficient job of moving folks on the general transportation system, but we still need help with those folks who have to use a lift program in the metropolitan areas, and that really is the only resource available to the vast majority of the state where there isn't a public transit program like there is in Portland or the major cities.
Yes.
So for people who need the lift program, can they use the TriNet, or is there a separate vehicle especially for them?
Chair Hannah, Senator Yee, there are special vehicles in Portland. There are small buses that have a mechanical lift in them, and they have room for more than one wheelchair, for example, and have special restraint devices that are required by the federal government for transporting people in wheelchairs. Other people who are more mobile can use the fixed route buses or the low floor buses that we have, or NACS. We're required, any transit district that has fixed routes where there's a bus on a route that has a schedule is required by the Americans with Disabilities Act to provide service within 3/4 of a mile of that route during the same hours of the day and same days of the week with a lift type program. So we're required by federal law to provide a complimentary service called complimentary service, which operates same hours, same days of the week, and is available within 24 hours. So we run both a lift program and a regular fixed route program that's accessible.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Russell. Are you with Jim Long?
Well, not officially yet.
Well, why don't you both come up then?
Well, we're officially together. We came together because we work at the same place. My name's Jim Long. I'm a council member from the city of Halsey. Forgive me if I miss the protocol. I've never done this before, so bear with me on this. I'm testifying on behalf of the PGM budget. My whole life I've lived in small communities. I grew up in the Clapton-Astoria area, and I live in Halsey now. Halsey is experiencing tremendous growth pressures. We're getting a lot of that. We're kind of, in a sense, a bedroom community to Corvallis, Lebanon, Albany, Eugene, and in my case, even Salem. We don't have a transportation plan, to be perfectly honest. The one we have is woefully inadequate. It's somewhat addressed in our comp plan, but not very well. With a population of only 700, we don't have a planner either. Anything we do has to come from grants that we receive from usually the state to get anything done. On the other side of that, on the growth, our plan is not very good either. We're not very proactive. We're very reactive to any pressures we have for growth. Our inventory of developable land for residential purposes is not really there either, and that's just another thing we need to address. The TGM grant is one of the few funding sources out there that can help a city of our size, and we are definitely planning on applying and hopefully getting some money this year in that, but that's all I really have to say.
Thank you very much. Senator DeGroote?
To apply for that grant, will you apply to ODOT or to GLCD?
GLCD.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am John Russell. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association, also in support of the TGM budget. Excuse me. TGM, as you're all well aware, is a pass-through of federal T21 funds that goes directly to local jurisdictions. I believe this will be the third or perhaps the fourth round of TGM in the state. I believe also it has been working throughout the state. Last round, communities as diverse as Rainier, Florence, Canyonville, Tangent, Ashland, Ontario, Tillamook were all funded, as well as, of course, the larger jurisdictions such as Salem or the metro area. I myself hail from Salem. TGM helps communities and counties deal with growth pressures that are prevalent throughout the state by managing growth. There's a movement, as I'm also sure you're aware, of stopping growth in Oregon. We in the planning profession do not believe in stopping growth. However, we strongly believe in managing growth. TGM allows resources for that to happen. We're also all struggling, and I'm sure you've heard very often, with the impact on local governments of ballot measure 50. We do have very limited resources, and when you're looking, making choices between hiring police officers and firefighters or doing a transportation plan, the plan falls off the shelf. That's a reality we all have to face, even as planners, if that's somewhat painful to me. This is a resource. It's federal funds. In the whole state, it's not a huge amount of money, but it is very important funding for local jurisdictions. We ask you to support this and continue a program that is working and hopefully will continue to work. And that's the conclusion of my brief comments. I'd be happy to respond to any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Duke.
I just want to make one comment. Not all of TGM is a direct pass-through to cities and counties. You said all the money goes to cities and counties. It doesn't. Some of it hires personnel in ODOT. Some of it hires personnel in D.C. and DLCD. And some of it is used by DLCD to hire consultants to do projects. And then there's the money also that goes to cities and counties.
I apologize for that.
Yeah, so there's a whole chunk of it that you guys never get to see.
Okay. Good question. For me.
So I want to know if it's possible to ask for growth planning money from DLCD. I think they have money for that. So why do you have to go to transportation department to ask for growth planning? I guess this question is either for Jim Long or for Mr. Russell.
Mr. Sheriff, Senator Yee, I'll try. I'm not an expert on the funding cycle, but there is technical assistance funds in the DLCD budget, and I'm sure Mr. Long will be could try to pursue those as well. They are, of course, limited. The TGM funds goes directly to transportation related projects, and frankly, it's another source that's out there. So there's two sources. They're both used, but I hate to sing the old song, but there's not enough of either of them for the demand to deal with growth that's prevalent throughout this state.
Another question,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman. So why doesn't the money go to DLCD? Why does the money go to transportation? Seems to me one department should be able to take care of planning.
Mr. Chair, sorry. Again, I will have to defer to a certain extent. I'm not intimately familiar with the history of how the program was structured. My assumption on that is that the two agencies collaborated because it is to pursue a planning program, and DLCD, of course, is the state planning agency. ODOT is the recipient of the funds from the feds, and my assumption, the two
felt they had mutual interests and decided to collaborate on the program. But I'm not an expert in this area.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
So the city of Harvey, for example, just sent two applications, one to DLCD and one to Transportation Department?
I believe Halsey could deal directly with DLCD for both applications. And I've talked with my friend Mr. Long here and suggested that his first contact should be the field representative at DLCD for both of those applications.
I'm borrowing Mr. Russell's expertise through personal friendship. I would probably be stealing City of Salem staff time in doing so, but it does help out the small city of Halsey to be able to have that network to access. And as you know, Senator, we do have needs in our little community that we cannot provide for ourselves. So this is just one avenue of us to approach to meet those.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, maybe we should ask ODOT, why don't they put growth money to LCD?
We'll deal with that when we come time in work session.
Yes.
Mr. Bradwell, simple question, where in the budget is the CGM?
Page 46, or 55. It's a combination of IT money, G21, I guess.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I believe the new cycle will be the T21 fund.
T21 fund, yeah, rather than IC.
Although
they didn't change the name of it.
Correct. Thank you.
Same message.
It's
in the small budget book. I have the large.
Page 57, actually. On page 58 is the policy option package. And we haven't had this overview yet.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stacey Graham, City of Rexham. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm members of the committee. My name is Stacey Graham. I'm actually here today representing the Oregon Downtown Development Association, of which I am a board member. I live in Dayton, and I serve there as City Council President. I'm also a member of the Chamber Board and the chair of the Main Street program there to revitalize downtown areas in Dayton and Sublimity. I am not here representing the city. However, I will share some information with you about
okay.
that.
All right. Did you say we're from Dayton?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. So we have Gresham down here. So
maybe because Graham's my last name and that might...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That might...
All right. Thank you.
I'm here to ask you to continue to support funding of the ODOT budget in four specific areas. One, local planning, particularly transportation planning. Number two, for TGM projects. Number three, for the work of the Community Solutions Team. And number four, finally, for rural transit opportunities for both seniors, disabled, and also other audiences and people who live in the communities who don't have access to transportation, particularly in rural areas. I'm going to skip a lot of what I was going to say because Mr. Russell and the counselor from Halsey spoke quite eloquently. We have communities that are a part of the Oregon Downtown Development Association all over the state of Oregon who look to the Department of Transportation for all sorts of help and the LCD and the Community Solutions Team. We are losing revenues in our cities. They've been decreasing, as you know, for the last few years. And we are eliminating police officers and parks budgets and having to do special levies to keep our pools and our libraries open. And so it becomes more and more important as those things happen for us to be able to rely upon the technical support and expertise and sometimes grant funding from the Department of Transportation and the Community Solutions team. In my particular community, we recently completed a local transportation plan received technical expertise from the Department of Transportation. We've even received help in getting our entrance signs that our Main Street project is supporting and has found outside funding for, and gotten a lot of community support and in-kind contributions. They have helped us with our siting, and we have worked with them through Community Solutions. Many of the TGM projects are supporting downtown revitalization programs and economic development in our OTA communities. The grants through historic preservation and other granting sources have provided us with information for revitalizing communities. And then the constant support that we need in terms of tying transportation and land use planning together has been extremely important to us. I am also serve as the president of Today's Choices Tomorrow's Community, which is a nonprofit organization in Marion and Polk counties, and we have developed a shared vision for the two counties. And last year we worked with Portland research firm Davis and Hibbetts to conduct a quantitative research study about the opinions that our residents have on quality of life issues. And I just wanted to share with you the key issues that they pointed out, and this was 607 residents. It was a statistically valid survey, that they worry about preservation of open spaces and natural areas, traffic congestion, population growth, and urban sprawl. So we see these issues as really tied extremely closely together. OTA and Main Street, the downtown associations, and our rural cities in particular need to have the support to continue our community and economic revitalization efforts. We need to have help in transportation planning. We need support for looking at alternative ways to provide public types of transit opportunities, both public and private, in the rural areas, so that not only seniors and disabled individuals are served, but also people who don't have access to cars, people who need to get to the community college for training or to the AFS office or to get to the schools to work with their children. We continually rely on the technical assistance, the grant funding, the training and the education, and the general support that's provided by ODOT and the Community Solutions team. We believe that it's critical to our success at managing growth, keeping us out of court sometimes, and enhancing our ability to revitalize our downtowns and our local economies. I urge you to continue to support the efforts of ODOT in supporting small communities.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments. Any questions or comments by committee members? No, thank you very much. Todd Davidson? Todd's not here. And that finishes up everybody that's signed up. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? If not, we will be adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning, when we'll reconvene public testimony on transit and transportation plan. We are adjourned.
In hearing room B.
Oh, hearing room B.
Yeah.
As in boy.